Turley, and you're watching Feminine Wealth TV, the show that uncovers the diamond tips on creating truly conscious wealth from game changers, world shakers, and wealth creators. I'm joined on the show today by the wonderful Wendy Mack from WendyMack.com, and we're going to be talking about the power of marketing. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you've been carving it up a bit in the world of marketing recently with the launch of your Smart, Savvy and Rich program.
Yeah, and you know what? It's so exciting and it's been going really well, so I'm really happy.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's great. So look, I always start the show with a little story about how I meet my guests and how we actually met. So I've got a really funny story to share about Wendy, because it was more about myself, really. So my first time to meet Wendy Mack was actually at my own very first speaking engagement. Yeah. And Wendy was the speaker just before me. So she got up on stage and she delivered this funny, authentic, like the whole crowd were loving it, and I was sitting in the crowd just completely sweating, going, how am I going to get up and speak after this wonderful woman? You were so good. But so one of the things though that really resonated with me at the time was you said just hit go.
Yeah.
Was your philosophy.
Yes.
And it's something that, you know, I suppose I've always subscribed to myself, but I loved that. And I wanted to just kick off today with, how did you sort of come up with that philosophy, or where did it come from, that sort of fighting spirit in you?
Sure. Well, you know, first of all, thank you so much for saying that about the speech. It was very kind. And, you know, I don't know that I would call it fighting spirit so much, but it's definitely, I guess, an action-oriented ethic that I've got.
Yeah.
So I'm big about action, and I'm big about, you know, never really just complaining about stuff or whinging about things. You know, if stuff isn't happening the way that you would like it to happen, for me it's always like, you can create your future. You have the ability in your hands to do something about it and change what you think is going to lie ahead. So for me, it's always been, you know, don't just sit there. Hit go, take action, go change something in your life, or do that thing that you always wanted to do. Don't just sit there thinking about it or talking about it, because that it's never going to happen.
It ruins, it ruins your health and your enthusiasm and everything. That really...
But talking doesn't make action happen.
No.
So for me, I guess, you know, a lot of that is a work ethic that I grew up with. And
do you think it came from your family background?
Absolutely. I think my family, as well as the environment in which I grew up. So I grew up in Malaysia, just the way that, you know, schooling was there, it's very disciplined and reasonably rigid. And I think that also carved out a lot of work ethic that I've taken with me into my adult life.
Yeah. And look, I mean, did you ever, because I know obviously your story now, I mean, was there a time that you felt that you procrastinated a bit yourself on hitting go?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think I definitely spent a few too many years in my corporate life before actually taking action myself and actually hitting go on my own business and reinventing myself as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So I think I probably spent a little bit too much time there.
And I think a lot of us do that. That would be a very common problem.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons why you spend a bit too much time. So I think it's important not to beat yourself up for it. You have to remember that there are issues or factors that everybody might be facing that possibly prevents you from hitting go to, you know, at the point where you want to hit go. So you really need to not beat yourself up, because there could be financial reasons.
Yeah, or even clarity.
Yeah,
like, do
clarity,
you know what you want to
hit
go? I mean, you sort of feel like, I want to do something, but I don't know what.
Yeah, absolutely. Clarity, financial reasons, I think family commitments, time commitments. So you can't really beat yourself up too much, but you do want to make sure that you don't sit on that forever.
That idea of forever, because what will happen is that somebody else will go and do it.
Yeah. They always say, you know, there's a saying that there are no new ideas in the world because there's so many people. It's just who gets there first.
Yeah. That's right. So how did you get through that? I mean, what was the moment, or like, I suppose, what were your tips or your strategies in actually getting to that point where you did hit go?
Yeah. I think that, again, you know, going back to my original philosophy, it's always about action. I really think if there is something that you want in life, it can be had, but you need to actually discipline yourself to go out and get it and take the action to make it happen. But the other thing that I do remember very, very clearly was I was working for a huge multinational, and I had a very high-level marketing role at the time. And I remember it was Melbourne Cup, and we had to have a conference call at 3 a.m. in the morning with our U.S. parent company.
Oh, wow.
Which was crazy. Like, you wouldn't even think that that was possible, but it happened. And I remember going into the office at 3 a.m. on Melbourne Cup night thinking, this is not a life.
This is not a life. That's exactly, I mean, that's awful. You have to really love doing that to actually want to
do
it. A lot of investment bankers have been doing that sort of stuff.
And you know, some people.
Some people love it.
Yeah,
actually,
they do.
Drive
and,
us, yeah.
And they love the adrenaline that that brings.
Mm.
But for me, I really had to take a step back and go, okay, life is short. And knowing that I might have a very finite amount of time.
Mm.
And I don't want to sound morbid about it, you know, but I'm very realistic about the fact that we only get one shot at this life. So what do I want to make of it? And is it really sitting in an office at 3 a.m. having a conference call with my U.S. parent company?
What do you really want to do with your life?
So that was for me when I was able to really get out of that and go, I need to take action. And the action doesn't have to be big or huge or, you know, something.
It can be just a decision, actually.
Exactly. Mm. And it can be something that you do in bits. So don't think that you have to put that pressure on yourself to come up with an entire business and launch it and have $1 million.
Or you don't have to leave the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Tomorrow, but you might need to get on a strategic path to making that happen.
There are little steps that you could be doing on the side to make your dream come true while being realistic about the commitments that you need to fulfill in your everyday
life. And making sure that it all doesn't fail on you. I mean, was that what you did? Did you sort of take steps like that?
Yes, yes. So I started and I actually did, you know, put my toe in the water and started working weekends. I'm not going to lie, it's hard. Like, I was working.
It is hard, but you used your time and energy, which was the thing, that the resource you did have at the time. Yeah.
Perfectly put. It was what I had, and it was what I could give to my business to make it come true.
Mm.
And that was that time and energy. So for a while there, I was doing some crazy days in terms of 7 days a week. But I was so motivated to do it because it was my dream.
It was your own passion and your own dream. I mean, that's something I'm hearing a lot in the interviews that we're doing, is that a lot of people's businesses get started that way, where they actually do need to work two jobs, or they need to actually focus their energy and attention on creating that passion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Now, there was a point where I then had to take that leap of faith and go, so do I believe in my business? And is it now something that I'm actually just going to devote myself to full time? And that's always a scary leap.
That is a very scary leap. But I think a lot of people don't even ever make that leap.
And that's the thing. It's like, you, at some point, you have to really just make that decision one way or the other, because you can't keep burning the candle at both ends. So if you keep doing that whole, you know, work weekend,
it gets very tiring, and then your relationships start to suffer.
Correct.
Everything can go south in your health.
Yeah. So I think you really have to be kind to yourself and give yourself a time frame, a generous amount of time frame. So don't, you know, make it unrealistic and give yourself 3 months to make your business happen. But do give yourself a time frame and know that, you know, you're going to put all of your passion and energy and effort in that time frame to building your business and seeing where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end of that time frame, take stock and see if it's something that you can really sustainably do in the long term. There's never...
And make money from, of
and
course.
Make money
because at the end of the day, I mean, really, business is about... I mean, you have to... It has to be a sustainable business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
There's no shame, I think, also, in saying sometimes it didn't work.
Absolutely, yeah. Fail fast.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Because I know
how it's done. Well, you probably want to fail. You probably want to fail while you still have the job on the side. You probably don't want to fail.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You know, if you've given yourself a deadline, then you can actually see within that time frame while you've still got your day job if things are going to work out.
Mm.
And if they haven't, then at least you've got that fallback, that plan B being your day job. But you've also allowed yourself enough time to really see if this could work. And then, as I said, you know, there's nothing wrong if it didn't work.
Well, there's nothing wrong in saying, well, that just didn't work.
Yeah.
Or maybe you think of a new idea.
Or refining it.
Or you will have learned a lot along the way.
Yeah. I certainly have done things where it didn't work. But, you know, if you're smart about it and you don't sort of invest your entire house, you know, into it, then you can afford to take those little risks.
Yeah.
And go, okay, that didn't work. Why not? Let me tweak the idea. Maybe, you know, I got this wrong, that wrong.
Well, that's about being strategic rather than emotional. So when you say, you know, I had this great idea, I was really passionate about it, I so wanted to do it, I believed in it, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really love about what you did, and maybe it just looks like this from the outside, but you seem to be very strategic from the beginning. You know, you did the book, you did the course, you got on TV, you got the business model right. Was that something that you had always planned, or was it sort of an evolution that happened accidentally?
Look, first up, although it may seem like it was the perfect sort of journey, it really wasn't. There were a few hiccups along the way. But generally, it was quite planned. I always knew from the outset that I didn't want to be just a fashion stylist. I always had a greater plan for what I wanted to do as an entrepreneur, and I always knew that I wanted to have a bigger impact on the industry of fashion styling as a whole.
Right, okay.
So
that was your vision,
I suppose. That was my vision, yeah. So that helped me to sort of work out the steps that I needed, or not steps, they were actually just goals that I wanted to hit to help me have a positive impact on my industry.
Yeah.
It was an evolution a little bit in the respect that, you know, a couple of things did happen along the way that I didn't expect to happen or I
which
didn't plan for.
Which is natural. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one of the things, I mean, obviously you train stylists now.
Yes.
That's one of the businesses that you have. So you're now the trainer of the trainers kind of model.
Yeah.
Do you find, you know, it's mainly girls, I would think. Any men?
Largely, it is 99%.
So let's say the people. Yeah. So the people coming through your courses now, do you find that could be a bit of a missing link? Like they're coming into just a course about becoming a stylist, but they don't get that there's actually a whole lot more to it than just becoming a stylist if you want to run a business.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For me, the thing that I've seen the most is a lot of people come into the business because they're excited about fashion and they want to work as a stylist, but they don't quite realize how...
There's more to it than
correct.
That.
I always say you might be in the business of X, whatever your occupation or industry is, but you ultimately, no matter who you are, no matter what you sell, you're in the business of marketing.
Yes.
And you have to actually know how to market your business and yourself for you to actually run a sustainable long-term business, something that will actually last the test of time and will actually bring you the income that you need.
And actually it's all about income. I mean, I know there's passion and vision and all that, but income is the big thing.
But we all have to live, right?
We have to live, and the business needs to be kept alive.
Yes. Yeah. So definitely for me, that was the missing link, was that people didn't realize how much that they had to do to establish their reputation as someone that other people want to work with. So, you know, building that credibility and trust with your audience and demonstrating to your audience the knowledge that you have, the knowledge.
And getting an audience.
Yeah.
This is the other thing. I mean, you know, you as a stylist, you come out, you know, you've trained as a stylist, you love what you do.
Looking for customers.
How do you get audience in order to even establish credibility? I mean, what did you do in the early days of your styling career to actually achieve that? Was it something you knew, or did you learn that through the process of building the business, I guess?
Well, it was something that I knew a lot about, obviously.
From your marketing background.
Given that I've got a marketing background. But I'd certainly learned a lot of lessons along the way. And year one and year two of my first business was a huge learning shift for me. So I've been really lucky because I'm now at the other end of that spectrum and I can now take all of these learnings and teachings and pass it on to other people.
Yes.
But the biggest things that I have learned have really been about understanding that it takes multiple touch points in order to get people to want to work with you, and understanding that you actually do need to put a lot of yourself out there for people to actually want to become part of your audience.
Yeah.
So you ask me, how do you find audience?
Yeah. To put yourself out there, I think that's, you know, sounds easier than it is.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be very authentic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you've got to know the tools that you have available to you that will help you put yourself out there so that you start to create a reputation as an expert, a reputation as someone that people want to work with, and start to build that audience. So you only start to attract an audience when you have something valuable to say and offer the world.
Yeah.
But
said in the right way. Marketing language.
Yes.
This is so important.
Said in the right way, but also understanding the methods and the tools that you have available to you to get that message out there.
Yeah.
For example, learning how to use social media well, learning how to blog, or, you know, doing email marketing. So what you have to say and offer the world may be amazing, but we actually have to get quite deliberate about how you put your message out and where you put your message out for you to attract the right people
and
to
the
your
people
business.
That you want. So like, are you speaking the right language for the people
Absolutely.
That you're looking for? And I mean, obviously I want to talk about your Smart, Savvy, Enrich program. I mean, I love the name of that. How good is that? But, you know, was the sort of realization of this, and maybe training lots of these people in styling and realizing there is a bit of a missing link there, was that the sort of motivation to launch this new part of your business, the WendyMac.com? You realize that, you know, I have a lot of experience here now of what not to do.
Totally. What I learned was after I actually trained a lot of women and men to become fashion stylists, while I loved that, I also found that what I really enjoyed was after the course being able to continue to help them grow and to continue to support them as business people, as entrepreneurs.
As entrepreneurs.
So not just as stylists, you know, what else could I do and offer them in terms of help to really grow and build
and to be successful at this passionate thing that they really that they really want to do.
And like I said, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily have the luxury of having a marketing background. So there, you do need to sometimes.
It's overwhelming. I think for people in marketing, and I mean, I've got a really keen interest in marketing personally because I know that's where the money is. Right? I know that the money is there. But you know, for people who are not really into that or find marketing a bit cheesy, or a bit, you know, the slimy marketing, so
I don't
want
to
deal with the sales thing.
You
know, how do you deal with those people? Like, what tips would you give them about you know, embracing marketing?
Well, I think, you know, marketing is really all about putting your message out to the world. And as long as you have something valuable to say, that doesn't, you know.
Well, it's the authenticity thing.
It is. You can be
authentic in your marketing.
Absolutely. And you can be really true to yourself. In your marketing, we're not asking you to be something else that you're not. We're not asking you to say something that you don't ever believe in. And I'm the first to always say that you have to always, always be able to put your hand on your heart and say, I absolutely 150% believe in what I'm telling the world about my business, about my product, about my service. So as long as you've got that kind of honesty and authenticity, marketing doesn't come across as pushy or scammy or cheesy or, you know, really fake. It doesn't come across as any of that as long as you're being real with what you say.
But then that was one of the things I find challenging is I know, like, in the marketing world, that's what everyone tells you to do. And it's like what I said earlier, being authentic actually can be quite difficult sometimes because you think, surely it's easy to be myself. But when you're putting yourself out there, it's harder because all our masks come up and everything. So when you're writing, like, blog posts, for example, let's talk a little bit about how does one get authentic in a blog post? Like, I've decided that the best thing for me to do is just to sit down and brain dump and then go back and try and fix it up a little bit. But would you recommend, I mean, is that what you sort of teach people how to do?
Yeah, look, that's a really good question, Barbara, because I think that blogging is one of those really crucial things that most business owners in today's internet world need to do. If you're going to demonstrate your knowledge and expertise as someone who really knows what you're doing and what you're talking about so that you attract people to want to work with you, blogging is actually a great vehicle for you to get your voice heard and your message out there and to showcase your expertise. But it is hard to sometimes balance that with your own personality. And so, you know, whatever method works for you when it comes to the actual writing, so if you need to brain dump and then go back to edit, that's fine. But what you want to be looking for in general is just making sure that you aren't afraid to put a little bit of yourself into each post. You know, people love it when you can personalize the experience for them a little bit. And I'm not saying you have to put everything of yourself out there and hang out all your dirty laundry. No one needs to know that much.
Yeah, it's more a flavor of you.
You have to just be this, be real and go, this is me. So when I write, you know, you certainly, I hope, get a sense of who I am. And, you know, some days I'll talk about the fact that I'm feeling frustrated or insecure about things. But I'm always very careful about writing in a way that would never offend any of my readers or anything like that. So, you know, I'm talking about my emotions as I go through them, but I'm also being careful not to sort of turn it into a dumping ground of
a ranting post.
And so that's really, you know, the best advice that I can say about, you know, putting a little bit of yourself into your blog post to get it a bit more authentic. In general with marketing though, it really is all about, as I said, cultivating and creating an ongoing relationship with your ideal audience. So you have to acknowledge that people don't make a decision to buy or work with you just through one interaction. It's through a series.
Or just through one blog post. There's more to it than just blogging, of course.
Absolutely. So, you know, whether it's a blog or whether it's an email campaign that you've done or whether it's some social media that you're out putting out there, it never, the decision to work with you never happens through just one interaction. You have to make a conscious, deliberate decision to plan a series of interactions with your target audience so that through that relationship, over time, they understand who you are, they see your expertise, they understand that they're comfortable and confident with you, and they start to really view you as an expert in your field and someone that they can really trust enough to say, yes, I
want
to work
with
you.
And they naturally then want to work with you.
Because there's a relationship.
Because they feel the
yeah.
relationship, yes.
Yeah.
It's all about building that.
Yeah. yeah.
What about, I'm interested, you know, what about sort of sleeping giant businesses, right? So businesses that are even 5, 6, 7, 10, 15 years in, right, that are a bit dull and they've sort of lost their edge a little bit.
Yeah.
And they want to revamp marketing.
Yes.
What would you say? I mean, is it a different model for businesses like that that need a different structure, or is it the same formula,
yep.
I guess? What would you do with a bigger business like that?
Fundamentally, I think it's always the same model or formula, whatever you want to call it. You know, there are certain steps that you need to take if you want to really be seen as the person that everybody wants to work with.
Or the business, I guess, that people want to...
Yeah, the business. So, you know, I always talk about businesses as people because that's, I guess, part of the trick. For me, it's about humanizing businesses.
And it's about the identity of that business, yes.
So make that business a person that I want to work with and have a relationship with. So for me, so that's a really interesting thing that just happened just there because... For me, I have a slightly different way of thinking about it. It's like every business should be a personality and should be a human, you know, humanize that business for me, the consumer, so that I really just see, you know, emotions and a person.
And then something to connect to. Yeah. So I suppose for bigger businesses, maybe that's the trick, that if they want to revamp themselves, it's actually humanizing the business.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it does depend at the end of the day, ultimately, what industry you're in. Certain industries won't lend themselves to that.
Mm.
But for the majority of businesses and industries out there, humanizing it would be super powerful.
I even think in the financial industry, legal industries, I've seen some of that coming at the moment, actually, that there's a change and they are trying to create a personality.
Yes.
And it does work.
It does work.
So, yeah.
And I think you've also got to be really aware for the established businesses, really just consciously saying to yourself, look, challenge status quo. You know, what if we always
what
done
if we
in the
changed
past?
It?
What if we changed things?
What
if we looked at a different avenue to find customers? What if we have never been in social media and we
spoke to our customers differently?
Yeah.
So, spoke to them as people rather than
numbers.
So look, your Smart Savvy Enrich program. It's launching at the moment. Very exciting. This is round two.
Yes, it is.
So tell me a bit about the program. So what, you know, what does it entail? How long does it take?
Sure.
What are people going to learn? What are they going to achieve?
I always have had this philosophy that no matter what you sell, whether it's a product or a service, anything that you're doing, you have to come across as an expert in your field if you want people to say yes and work with you.
Mm.
Because we don't really want to work with people, or we don't make decisions to buy something from someone or a business that we don't trust at the end of the day.
It's
people,
all about that.
People trust.
Buy from people they trust.
Exactly. And that trust is created when you actually prove yourself as an expert in your field. So first comes trust. So we buy from people that we trust. But why do we trust them? Because we know that they know what they're talking about, know what they're doing. So they're experts in their field.
And they have that knowledge that we want.
Yes.
Yeah, that information that can
help
us.
So for me, it was always about, well, how can you be seen as the expert in your field? So you know my past. I came from a very strong corporate marketing background.
Yeah.
I threw in the towel on that and then became a fashion stylist. And I learned a lot through that process because it was a very short period of time before I was suddenly on TV and writing a book.
Oh, and you were the go-to expert in the fashion industry all of a sudden.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
that's
I've taken everything that I've done to help me establish a reputation in a new field in a relatively short period of time as an expert. So what have I done to get there? I've actually packaged up into this program into a six-step. Method.
Okay, great. Yeah.
And it's just it's done 10 weeks online from the comfort of your own home.
Oh, so people can do it because sometimes the courses and things, they don't work with your time frame.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But having said that, we also connect fortnightly in live phone calls as a group so that I can really help everybody out in a live environment. So we just
create that community that
can
help between
people
in the
course.
And
if they've got questions, they can ask. So you're never alone, but you
can
certainly do it in the comfort of your own home. You don't have to go somewhere to do it.
Yeah. And what would be, so that you said the
there are six steps.
What are the six steps?
Well,
if you don't mind telling us what the steps are, we're going to get some tips here.
Well, the first thing is to establish your platform. Now, establishing your platform is really finding a strong message within a niche in your field that you can really champion. I call it a hero topic.
Okay.
You know, what's a hero topic? What's that one topic that if we were to think about that topic, we would automatically associate you as the expert with that topic.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean, yeah.
So finding a topic in your industry that you can write about, talk about, speak about, and people want to listen and hear from you about that topic. So that's what I call a hero topic, and establishing your platform is super important, because what happens is when you are able to say, I'm an expert in this particular topic, and it can be quite a niche topic, eventually we start to associate you as the expert in all of these other topics.
Oh,
in
sort
field.
Of subtopics within that field. Yeah.
Kind of divide and conquer, you know? Conquer one niche topic in your broader industry, and then over time you start to become the expert in all of the other areas, and soon you'll be known as the expert in your whole industry.
Yeah. And when you say platform, what do you mean by that exactly? Do you mean these different topics or these different niches, or do you mean...
Yeah, it's your voice, it's your message, it's that real, you know, what do you have to bring to the table that is super valuable for all of your audience.
Okay.
I forgot the other five steps, didn't I?
This is why I was fascinated by this step one. I was still stuck on step one.
Carried away at step one.
So step two is
that monetizing your expertise.
Oh, I love this.
So,
the money.
I knew you'd love that.
You have to monetize it. There is no business
if you don't make money. And we're not saying that to be crass or to be really cold about
it's realistic.
Exactly. Yeah. We have bills to pay. You have a business to run. It needs to make you money.
Yeah.
So monetizing your expertise is about really taking your amazing knowledge and information, all of that valuable thing that you have to give to the world, but really being able to productize it.
Yeah.
So actually turn it into a product that you can sell.
That you can then sell. Absolutely. Yeah.
And ideally multiple times over. So for me, it's about actually monetizing expertise so that you break the barrier of hourly rate income earning.
Oh, time for working for time, swapping time for money.
Yes,
so many people have caught in that trap.
Exactly.
And actually, what I always say is, then you don't really have a business; you have a glorified job.
Pretty
if
well.
You're constantly
trading
time.
That's a great
money.
Way of putting it.
Yeah.
You get stuck in that trap of just working, you know, and you've only got a certain amount of hours per day. So
and
there's always
time
a limit.
Energy.
Yeah.
There's a limit to what
there's
you,
limit
can,
to
make.
What you
yeah.
can make.
And the amount of people that you can help.
Yes.
That's the other thing with your message.
So step two is monetizing expertise. So step three is all about using the power of the internet to help you get your message from step one, your hero topic, and your product to the world. So we're really using technology and all of the great tools that are out there on the internet to really help your voice get heard.
By as many people as possible.
Reach more people. Expand your impact and reach more people. Mm. Step four is actually establishing your credibility as an expert. So now we actually start to do things like use social media and blogging and newsletters and speaking at events and writing books to really help cement your reputation.
So when people see your product online, they go, oh, there's that, you know, that girl who does that thing. Or
you're backing it up. You're backing it up. You know, you're bringing something to the table where they go, yeah, she knows. She's the real deal, basically.
Yeah.
And then we look at how you develop your perfect pitch. So step five is a lot of people
perfect
fall
pitch
over.
Is hard.
And a lot of entrepreneurs, especially new entrepreneurs, fall over when it comes to this.
Yeah.
We don't really know how to pitch ourselves, and we don't know how to do it in a way that's
and we
succinct.
Fumble through it as well. You know, you go to a networking event and you think people go, oh, so what do you do?
And
you
we
just,
don't make it attractive.
Just stumble through the
we
thing.
Say something and people go, okay,
oh, whatever.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Anytime someone says that's interesting, it's really not.
Yeah.
So.
It's really. It's like saying, oh, that's nice.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So you teach this in the program.
Yes. And
it's so important.
And we talk about networking. Even if you're an introvert, we talk about how you can network productively, because there's a lot of networking.
Even if you don't like it.
Yeah, even if you don't like it, and also getting results from it. A lot of networking really doesn't come to anything.
Mm.
So that's step five. And finally, step six is about your marketing funnel, creating what I call your marketing funnel, which is in essence putting everything that we have from the first five steps into that series.
A sequence
of touch
online, points. So mainly online?
Mainly online.
Yeah.
But it is that series that I mentioned earlier about, you know, touching your customer over a period of time
and
to develop
that.
Yeah.
I guess that's your funnel, is the automation of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And developing that relationship. So really the funnel is all about, how am I going to, over a period of time, put everything together into a cohesive series of touch points with my ideal customer?
Yes.
And actually, you know, develop that relationship so that by the end of that series, they go, yes,
I
absolutely want to work with you or buy from you.
Yeah. Oh, look, this is absolutely vital, vitally important information. I mean, I just love the fact that you've launched this program. I think it's an amazing thing.
Well, I'm excited about it.
So look, if our viewers want to know more about Wendy Mack and about your program in particular, where should they go?
Well, they can jump on to wendymack.com. So that's M-A-K.com to join me on my blog. Or if they're interested in Smart, Savvy and Rich, they can just jump on to smartsavvyandrich.com.
Is that and A-N-D?
A-N-D.
Is andrich.com. Excellent. Wendy, it's been an absolute pleasure talking about your new program and all things marketing, because I'm a big believer in marketing and I know that is what really drives businesses forward.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listen, thank you to everyone again for watching for another week. Remember that you can catch me later this week on my podcast, Wealth Unplugged, on iTunes, where I'm going to be talking about my key takeouts from today's chat with Wendy. Also, remember to join me next week if you can. I'm going to be talking about the power of really good business partnerships with a lady called Claire Weevil-Plater. See you then.